when clients bring their own educational background about the subject matter to the relationship, you just get an infinite return on your experience with a doula because you're able to just like you're able to just keep upping the ante. Like every time Lauren came to me with a question or a comment, it was, and I've done this, and this is what I found. How do you feel about this? And you're able to tease out these like nuances to make something so specific for them instead of like, here's this website resource, give it a whirl.
Something I tell my clients all the time is a doula is not a substitute for doing your homework.
Welcome to Our Village Circle, a podcast centered around authentic sharing, honest storytelling, and elevating the voices of parents and professionals alike to demystify the realities of new parenthood. We understand on a visceral level that with the joy of your new human also comes every other emotion under the sun. We want you to feel seen, heard, known, and held in this life-altering stage. We wholeheartedly believe that everyone's story has something powerful to offer others as they navigate their own journey.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back. I'm your host, Shaylee Turner, and I am thrilled to be sharing today's birth story with you. It's a little bit unique in the sense that we are going to have both the birthing person and their doula on to share the same story from two different perspectives. This is something we've never had on here before, and I am so excited for you to hear these next two episodes. Our birthing person is Lauren Bacon Smith, she, her. She's 36 years old and a Northern Virginia native, currently living in Springfield, Virginia, with her Aussie husband, Lindsay, her son, Cameron, and her dog, Sheila. She works full-time as the chief people officer at a tech startup that focuses on hiring people with disabilities. Lauren is a self-proclaimed birth nerd and is extremely passionate about birthing people being educated and empowered to advocate for themselves to have a positive birth experience. And we'll also be joined by her doula, Casey Runk, she, her. You may have seen her on Instagram at Tips From A Doula. If you don't already follow her, pause this podcast, get on your phone and follow her. She began attending births in 2016, and she is honored to have supported over 250 families. She lives in the Virginia suburbs with her partner, their two dogs, a cat, and many houseplants. When she's not attending births, she enjoys home projects, cooking, and entertaining for friends. In today's birth story, part one of our two-episode series, Lauren shares her and her partner's fertility journey from trying spontaneously to getting ready for IVF and finally becoming pregnant. We talk through her pregnancy, which began under the care of hospital-based midwives, discovering that this care team didn't align with her birth goals, finding Casey and hiring her as her doula, and navigating a third trimester provider switch to another midwifery group in the area. We'll launch a little bit into her labor journey, but we'll save most of that for part two. It was so exciting to hear the same story from two different perspectives at the same time. It's something we've never had the opportunity to do before on this podcast. I can't wait for you to hear it. We'll begin in just a moment after this brief word from today's sponsor. Are you expecting a baby this year? Congratulations! It's likely you've chosen your care provider, thought about your baby registry, begun planning the nursery, maybe even hired a doula or registered for a childbirth class. But have you given much thought to your postpartum time? Everyone wants to hold the baby, but who is holding the one who birthed the baby? Do you know about the massive hormonal shifts that occur in the hours, days, weeks, and months after your baby is born as your body adjusts from your pregnancy? What about nourishment? Have you thought about how you'll be feeding yourself after baby arrives? Everyone tells you to eat healthy, but what is healthy eating in the postpartum period? What does that mean? Maybe you're nervous about how you'll navigate your changing relationships after baby arrives with your partner, your family, your friends. How do you plan to communicate your boundaries surrounding visitors, unsolicited advice, personal space, helpers? Who are your helpers going to be? Postpartum has and always will be the work of my heart. It's the reason that I came into working with expectant and new parents, and I am so thrilled to let you all be the first to know about my signature postpartum preparation webinar that I am launching this year, Preparing for a Smooth Postpartum. This offering, which can be taken anywhere in the world, is a virtual class that solely focuses on how to care for the newborn parents. We'll cover the golden hour, the hormones of postpartum, physical healing, emotional healing, nourishment, movement, relationships, community, visitors, boundaries, and more. I'll take you on a journey through the first year, what to expect, and how to best care for yourself during this time. Preparing for your birth, but not your postpartum, is kind of like planning a wedding without giving much thought to the marriage itself. People do it, but it's not advised. Not many resources exist for preparing for postpartum, though, so my intention for this class is to help fill in that gap. Our first live webinar will take place on Tuesday, February 21st at 7:30 p.m., and I am offering a special introductory price of $25 for this class only. That is 50% off. The next time this webinar will take place is in April, so don't wait to jump on this offer. There's no point in pregnancy that is too early to begin thinking about how to have a beautiful fourth trimester. This class can be a wonderful gift for someone who you know that is expecting. And what I love about teaching in the webinar format is that geography and availability is not a barrier to getting the information you need, like it can be with an in-person class. All class participants who attend the live webinar will receive 2 hours of virtual instruction via Zoom, a recording from our session, and a little time for a Q&A with me afterwards. You'll also receive a file with all handouts and class materials, along with our signature postpartum resource list. So if this sounds good to you, go ahead, sign up for the live webinar at the link in our show notes to take advantage of our special introductory price of $25. That's 50% off. I hope you'll join me for my first signature live webinar, Preparing for a Smooth Postpartum, on February 21st at 7:30. Now, back to our episode. Hi guys, welcome to our Village Circle.
Hi. Hi, thanks for having us.
I'm so excited to have you both on. Do you mind introducing yourselves?
Yeah, sure. My name is Lauren Bacon-Smith. I am 36 years old. My pronouns are she, her. My husband, Lindsay, and I live in Springfield, Virginia. We've been together for 6 years, married for 3. We have a rescue dog, Sheila. My husband is Australian, so we named her Sheila.
No way, I'm from Australia.
Oh my gosh, I forgot, actually. I was listening to one of your previous episodes, and I'm glad you brought that up, because I was like, oh my gosh. And then we have a baby boy, Cameron, who will be 1 in a few weeks, which is absolutely crazy. For work, I am the chief people officer at a small tech startup, and we have a focus on hiring people with disabilities.
Very cool. And what about you, Casey?
I'm Casey Runk, she, her. I have been working as a birth doula and childbirth educator since 16, which is bananas. It literally blows my mind when I see some of the first babies I saw born, like going to first grade. I remember when they were born. There's a direct link to how long you have been a birth worker and how much eye cream you buy. So like, I can really see the correlation and how long I've been doing this. And I no longer take birth doula clients. I do still teach childbirth education, but I am continuing my personal and academic education to change my role in working in reproductive health. And my tie to Australia is that during Lauren's birth, they were calling the baby Joey. And they called the baby Joey prenatally, and just would drop it so casually. And then in labor, it came up and I inserted this like very personal like tidbit about how my full name, like you can't see, but Lauren is like losing it right now. She was like in the throes of labor and they said something about Joey. And I was like, my middle name is Joe. I was named after my grandfather. He was such a good man, blah, blah, blah. And they were like, yeah, it's because Lindsay's Australian and Joey's a baby kangaroo. And I was like,
I was like, yeah, how do I bring it to her that that's not his real name? And we're just not telling anybody his name. So we've been using that as a nickname. Oh gosh.
Oh, that's, yeah. That's great.
Yeah. So my tie to Australia is not nearly as deep or powerful or meaningful, and is a little bit more embarrassing, but nonetheless, it's what it is.
Yeah. However we're connected, it's cool.
Yeah.
So this is my first time having two different perspectives of the same story on the podcast for listeners to glean. So I'm so excited to have both of you here sharing this story. Would you like to go ahead and launch in? I'll let you guys take it from here.
Yeah, sure. So I guess starting back at kind of our journey of getting pregnant, my husband and I always knew that we both, family was a big thing for us. I wanted to be a mom from before I could talk. And as a kid, I was always really fascinated with pregnancy and birth. And I couldn't wait to experience it myself. And so we wanted to start trying as soon as we got married. And we thought, oh, how cool would it be if we had a honeymoon baby? As if it's that easy just to pick exactly when you get pregnant. But little do we know, it wouldn't be that easy for us. It was about a year of trying when we decided that we needed to look into things. I had already done some testing and everything seemed okay with me. So we decided to do a at-home sperm test. Yes, you can buy those on Amazon for $20. And all it tells you is normal or low, or normal or abnormal. And we got an abnormal result. So we went to a fertility clinic and started doing further testing and found out that Lindsay had barely any sperm. And we were told that IVF was going to be our only option of conceiving. And even that was going to be challenging, and that it was going to take us a little while to be able to even start that process. So Lindsay went on medication. I, being a very type A, wanting control every situation person, went down the path of researching and putting him on a million supplements, doing acupuncture, red light therapy, lifestyle and diet changes. Fast forward a few months and we were able to get his numbers up way more than the doctors thought was possible. And we continued to try naturally, but it still wasn't working. So we decided we were going to move forward with IVF, and our insurance at the time did not cover it. So we were ready to pay out of pocket. We had opened up a new credit card, interest-free credit card. We had all the testing, everything done, ready to go. I had my birth control prescription that I was about to start the next day. Because for those of you who don't know, oddly enough, that is the first step of starting an IVF cycle. And that day Lindsay got a message on LinkedIn from a company that he had interviewed with 2 years prior, that he had really wanted to work at. And they asked him if they could speak to him that day. And they ended up offering him a job on the spot, basically the job he had interviewed for years ago. And we found out that their insurance was going to cover IVF at 100%. So we were just so excited, so relieved. We, of course, delayed our cycle by a month to when he could start the job and the insurance would kick in. In those few weeks, we then found out insurance was potentially going to make us do 3 cycles of IUI before IVF. We didn't want to do that. So we were back to potentially paying for it out of pocket, waiting to see if insurance would give us an exception given our diagnosis. So it was just this huge roller coaster of a few weeks. And although it was the last thing that we wanted to do, we decided still to try that one last month with very low expectations, try naturally. And so Lindsay starts the job, we're waiting for the insurance to kick in, and I was so stressed out about the whole insurance ordeal. And unlike every other month where I was tracking my cycle to the day and waiting and testing early, I hadn't done that. But I realized that my period was a day late, and I took a nap in the afternoon and woke up and just decided I had this weird feeling that I wanted to take a test. I wasn't excited. I wasn't nervous. I wasn't like hopeful like every other time, but I just had this weird feeling that I was going to take one. So didn't set a timer or anything, just kind of left it there and came back. And when I looked at it and saw a second line, it was hard to believe. I didn't even get excited because I just couldn't believe it. It was just one of those little paper strips. Like, I didn't even have the fancy tests because I was going to do that once we did our first cycle. So I immediately just like jumped in the car. Lindsay was on a work call down in the basement. I didn't tell him I was leaving. And I went to the drugstore and got a ton of tests, came home, took like 10 tests, and they all came back positive. And that's when I just lost it and was so overjoyed and relieved and emotional. And so I quickly pulled out one of the probably 5 options that I had bought months and months ago to tell Lindsay that we were pregnant, and did that like 15 minutes later. And then we told our family, or my family, Lindsay's family is in Australia. So we had to, that was a little bit more coordination, but told my family the very next day. And they were just as shocked as we were, because they were all on this roller coaster of the fertility journey with us, and we're waiting for us to start IVF. So just the whole, everything happens for a reason, and timing was, I've always believed in that, but this really took that to the next level. So normal first trimester, super fatigued, super nauseous, but everything was normal. Early second trimester, I started to get pretty bad back pain, and I was really like kind of shocked by that because I barely had a belly at that point. But I guess that the relaxin was really starting to kick in for me then.
Even the subtle changes can cause such a big difference in the body.
Yeah. We also had the bright idea of DIY renovating our entire house the whole time I was pregnant, which
I can do.
Yeah. Which I don't fully regret, because it definitely would not get done now. But I was active, but I was not working out like I had always thought I would during pregnancy, because Lindsay and I are both really into fitness. So I do kind of regret not keeping up with the workouts and weights, because I think that probably would have helped with my back. But I'm very into integrative health and nutrition and fitness. And actually about a year, right kind of when we started trying, I had decided that I wanted to work with midwives when I did get pregnant. And so I switched to from an OBGYN that I really liked, but I had asked her a few years earlier when a friend that was trying to get pregnant had asked me to watch The Business of Being Born with her. And I asked my OBGYN about it at an appointment that I had relatively soon after watching that. And her response kind of rubbed me the wrong way a little bit. So I kind of always knew that even though I liked her for my well woman care, that I was probably going to be looking for a different practice for when I was pregnant. I was kind of surprised to find the lack of options for midwifery care in the Northern Virginia area, because we did want to still have a hospital birth, but work with midwives. So found a practice, switched over, and was with them for about a year before we did get pregnant. And once I got pregnant, I started down the journey of really spending a ton of time, maybe almost obsessively, educating myself on pregnancy, but mostly labor and birth. And I just think it's really important to be able to advocate for yourself, and you have to have the knowledge and education to be able to do that. And I was never like blown away with the practice I was at. They were fine. It was around the 24-week mark where I had done enough education that I started asking questions about the actual birth. And I was, because no one had brought it up with me. No one asked me even once, oh, what kind of birth are you hoping for or planning for? Or that they had not talked about what their policies or beliefs were. So I started asking them questions. One of the podcasts that I listened to kind of provided some guidance and even like did mock role plays of what some answers you might expect or could expect are, and some rebuttals to them. So I used some of those questions and I was not feeling great about the answers I was getting back. And it was a little bit confusing because I was like, well, here I am with this collaborative midwifery group. This isn't what I thought midwives were supposed to be like. So by my 28-week appointment, I had a follow-up ultrasound to check on something, and he was measuring about 3 weeks ahead. He was measuring about a week ahead since literally the first early ultrasound that I got at the fertility clinic, but we had jumped ahead to about 3 weeks. He was measuring 3 weeks ahead. And the midwife that I met with, it was an awful appointment. Some of the questions that I had asked leading up to this and then also at that appointment were like, how long can I stay at home once my water breaks? Do you follow the Friedman's curve or do you allow labor to progress naturally? When do you cut birthers off from, how long do you let them push? And like I said, I wasn't thrilled about the answers that I was getting. So at this 28-week appointment, I told the midwife that I was planning an unmedicated birth. And instead of saying, oh, that's great, yeah, you can totally do it, she said, well, are you hiring a doula? Because we will not help you labor because we don't have time for that. I told her.
Which ended up being such a gift for you.
Yeah. Oh, no. I mean, this honestly was, if it hadn't happened and it hadn't been so borderline traumatic for me, things would not have turned out the way that they did at all. Casey and I talk a lot about that. So I'm very thankful that she was super rude and awful. But she told me that when I said that I knew myself and I would be very inward and would want to be left alone, she said, you say that now, but this is not an hour long ordeal. And then I said, well, I would actually like to have a home birth, but my husband doesn't feel comfortable with that. And she said, you're an awful candidate for an home birth. You have a huge baby and you're old. Because I was, yeah.
I don't know if I remember that. That's horrible.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
And I just very uncharacteristically said nothing. Like my husband and I just looked at, he was with me at this appointment and we just stared at each other. Like, and he knew like what I was saying to him telepathically, like, get me out of here. And I just looked at her and I said, okay, thank you. Like, there's no point. Like this conversation is not going anywhere. So I left there knowing two things. One, we need to try to get out of here. Get out of this practice. And two, we need to hire a doula, because although I thought I had so much information and was really confident in advocating for myself, if I can't like spit my knowledge out and fight back here in this appointment, in this checkup room, there's absolutely no way that I'm going to be able to do it during labor.
Yeah. And good for you for recognizing that, because it's not uncommon for folks to be in a situation like that. And then take that as fact and say, oh, well, I can't do this because my doctor said I'm old.
Yeah.
Good for you for knowing better. Good for you for knowing that you needed to get out. That's a huge sign of strength. And especially, like, I personally believe that providers should be discussing the birth from the first appointment.
Yeah, because if it's not going to be a fit, like, let's figure it out now.
Yeah.
The other big thing that was kind of the push during that appointment was that she was saying that they would likely need to induce me at 39 weeks because of his size. And she could already tell because I had done my homework. She didn't even let me question before she said, and if you decline, you will be putting your baby at risk for shoulder dysocia. And you will probably need a C-section. And I know you don't want that. And this was at 28 weeks. So I was like, all right, that's absolutely not what we want. So I went home and started Googling and trying to look up doulas. And of course, I'm panicking because at this point, we're almost at 30 weeks. And I found Casey's website. And I immediately loved what she had to say on there. but I did see a note on the website that said she was only accepting trauma needs clients and repeat clients. But after reading her reviews, and I think I left her website and went and looked at other websites and came back, and I was like, what? I'm going to reach out just in case and see, like, maybe she can fit me in. And she responded super quickly and said, let's set up a phone call. And I was so excited. And Lindsay and I had a call with her. And within the first 5 minutes, we were looking at each other again, that whole telepathic thing, like, okay, yeah, this is it. I just instantly trusted her and felt comfortable and felt connected with her. And I think that's the biggest thing for me was with, especially if we were going to be stuck at the current practice we were at, I didn't know what midwife we were going to get. Of course, you don't know what nurses you're going to get or what OB might be on call, all of that. So whether you've met with them once before, like, that's not really going to do much. But so we wanted somebody that we knew and somebody that we connected with and that our kind of personal values also aligned, because that's something that's really big and important for my husband and I in our lives. And there were just a lot of parallels and connections that we felt with Casey. She did tell us, I think possibly even an email before the call, because I explained to her why I was reaching out and what was going on. She said, yes, you need to switch practices. You can't fight your way through like labor and to have the birth you want. And I think that you need to, based on what you're saying you want, you need to switch to GW Hospital in Washington, DC. And we live in the suburbs in Springfield, Virginia. So I was like, yes, please, Casey.
I've said this to Lauren like privately, but, and I think everything that we will say during this, like we've said to each other privately, but I remember getting off that interview call and being like, these people are never going to hire me. Like they, and I'm looking at it now, like I have pulled up the initial inquiry where like Lauren reached out to me. And I mean, it's this, like when you get an inquiry from someone that is sort of them just like bleeding their heart out to you of like, I want to do this, from the first correspondence until even just like right now, like looking at Lauren, talking about her birth, like the only way that I can describe her, and I say this with like the most amount of passion and love that I have, is like, she's like a thoroughbred that just wants to run. Like she is a racehorse and she just wants to do it. And she just wanted to do it. And she just wanted to have her baby. And the thing that was going to make that happen was for people to get out of her way. And I like read her email. I talked to her and Lindsay on the phone and I was like, cool, like you can do this. Like, let's do it. Like, but this isn't going to work there. It's going to work here. And I think at one point during the interview, I made the worst analogy of my life, which was comparing giving birth to buying a house. And I said, like, I remember saying this and just as it was coming out, I was like, back it up, Casey, back it up. You're going to lose them. You're going to lose them. And it was, when you're going to buy a house, you look like you can talk someone down 5 or 10%. You can't talk them down 50%. And so if you're going into a provider, you can get a 5 or 10% change in what they're going to offer. You can't get a 50% or greater change in what they're going to offer. Right. And it's very true, but also here's this family who was like bleeding their heart out to me, but then I meet them with cool, cool, cool. But you're going to do that. You should think about doing this and this. Oh yeah. And changing providers. Oh, you're concerned about driving into the city. Don't worry. I'm your neighbor. I live in Springfield too. And I go to GW all the time. It'll be fine. Trust me. You've never met me, but trust me. And so just sort of like the bluntness that I had, which like, I think I typically am a fairly direct person, but yeah, I just got off that interview and I was like, I mean, that was a waste of an hour of my life. Like, these folks are never going to call me back. And it ended up being such a great relationship. And I still feel that Lauren just wants to run. Like, she's a powerhouse. And we just needed to get out of her way. And it was pretty, I mean, they were very easy clients to have because there was no guessing. Like, no guessing about anything. It was so straightforward and direct. And it was like, this is what we want to do. This is what we want. This is what we want from you. Should I be doing this? When clients like bring their own educational background about the subject matter to the relationship, you just get an infinite return on your experience with a doula, because you're able to just like, you're able to just keep upping the ante. Like every time Lauren came to me with like a question or a comment, it was, and I've done this, and this is what I found. How do you feel about this? And you're able to tease out these like nuances to make something so specific for them, instead of like, here's this website resource.
Right.
Give it a whirl.
Yeah. Something I tell my clients all the time is a doula is not a substitute for doing your homework.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I people had asked me, because I was relatively open about the fact that I wanted to have an unmedicated birth and was going to be working with midwives, and really didn't know many people in my circle that had done that, and got a lot of the, oh my God, why are you crazy? It's 2021. It's, oh, you say that now. And then people asked, oh, are you going to get a doula? And I was like, no, I think doulas are awesome. I think the concept is great. I just don't think it's for me. I had this kind of misconception of doulas being super hippie, kind of earth, moon, and stars, and obnoxiously positive. And me in sitting there in pain and somebody saying, oh, no, you're fine. Like, and me being like, shut up. And so I was like, I don't think this was going to mesh well with how I am. And I also was really concerned about the amount of energy it would take me to be polite and nice and not be a total B to the doula like I could be to my husband. So, I mean, like what Casey was just describing about how she's just like honest and blunt and straightforward, that was like what was so refreshing to me, that she simultaneously honors and respects like the birth experience and has that little bit of like understands the spiritual side of it, but everything is backed by evidence-based information and this just like endless amount of knowledge. And it's not just this like woo-woo, oh yes, breathe and you're one with the earth, whatever I thought that a doula might be like. I just wanted somebody that was going to support me and do what was best for me and my baby and help me accomplish what I wanted, but also not pushing their own agenda if things needed to go differently. And I could immediately tell that Casey was that person. I didn't have trust in the team that I was with, and I instantly trusted her. So,
I can't understate how important that is to trust the people in the room.
Yeah. Yeah.
It affects everything. It affects your hormone levels. It affects your oxytocin levels that are responsible for moving labor forward. If there's distrust in the room, even if your mind is saying, yes, I trust this person, your body doesn't lie.
Yeah. Well, that was the biggest thing that Casey taught me. And what she probably said in that initial call about switching providers was like, and she posts about this a lot as well, like you don't want to fight/you can't fight. You can't fight and give birth and do labor at the same time. Like it just, like you said, with your hormones, like that's not going to work. That's like the number one thing I preach now so much when I'm on all these different moms groups online, people are asking questions or having issues. I'm just like, you have to trust your team and feel safe and find a team that you don't even need a birth plan with, because what they do, just standard practice, is that's your birth plan. And that's exactly what we found at GW. The first appointment that I had, I said, oh, don't you need a urine sample? And they said, no, we don't. Unless something seems wrong, we would get more information and maybe need to do that. But you're just here for a check. I was like, okay. And then when I explained why I was transferring and that I had a huge baby and the threat of induction and some of the things that were said to me, the midwife looked at me like in shock and said, we don't even do standard third trimester growth scans here because they're so inaccurate. They don't really tell us anything. And everyone gets a trial of labor. We don't induce for large babies. And I just started laughing and she was looking at me like I was crazy. And I was like, I'm just so happy. Like, I can't believe this. It was just this night and day experience. And I finally felt safe and excited. And I was able to like relax. So I feel like people just go to the OB that they've always gone to, or they go to the hospital that's closest to them. And they don't think about the fact that you have choices and you spend a ton of time like researching wedding venues or even like a restaurant that you want to go to and looking at reviews and looking at their stats and their whatever. And then you just go wherever you think you should go for your birth. And you also, people don't think about the fact that you have the option and power to fire them. You're paying them. They work for you.
Yep.
Like when, yeah. So switching to GW was just such a blessing. I always had it in my head that I would go past 41 weeks. Most first time moms do when left alone. So I had a pretty big belly. Everyone kept saying, oh, I bet you're so over this. You're ready to be done. And although I was in a considerable amount of pain with my lower back, I was fine. I did end up getting a pretty bad cold at the end of pregnancy. And I was very nervous about that and how I could possibly get through labor when I couldn't even breathe through my nose. But
I had that with my second.
Yeah. Casey assured me that my body wouldn't go into labor when I was like that. But yeah, I just felt so beautiful and special and powerful being pregnant. And I was kind of sad about the thought of it being over. So I was pretty patient until the outside voices, social media messages, text messages from family and friends, all meaning very well. But where is your baby? What? No baby yet? Oh, is your baby here yet? Lindsay and I started joking. Yeah, he was born 2 weeks ago. He's actually already gone off to college. We just forgot to tell you guys. Like, no, he's not here yet. You would know. At that like 40 week mark is where I started really leaning on Casey a lot for support. And I think I definitely didn't know that was something that doulas do. Or maybe not all doulas, but Casey does. The support, because I didn't start working with her until 30 weeks. So that would have started super early on, which now looking back, I'm like, oh my gosh, every little thing that I had questions about or concerns about, having somebody that is a professional that you can text and they not only have science-based information and personal professional experience, but they know you and they know how to communicate with you. And Casey would know how to first affirm what I was feeling and let me know that those feelings were valid, but then always back it up with information. So
there was a moment, I think it was just like a few days before he was born. You just sort of like, it all got to you. Like, it was like too much. It was like, I am like now talking about scheduling an induction, because even in the best hospital systems, at a certain point, you have to get it on the books, even if it is at 42 weeks. And everyone is texting me. And now I'm starting to second guess myself. And it just comes to a head. And I think that everyone who goes past 40 weeks, like, can experience that on some level. Like, even out of hospital birthers are like, I got till 42 weeks or we're going to a hospital and I don't like that. Like, that is, it is, it's this like stopwatch mentality. But there was a text between Lauren and I, and I remember it. It was a Friday night. It was like 8 o'clock at night and we were just texting back and forth. And I said, listen, when you were opening a credit card, thinking about how you were going to pay for IVF, you were hoping that this day would exist in some way. And now we are here. Like, this is the time that you imagined and were nervous would never come to fruition. And we're here and we're in it. And your labor is going to start when it's going to start. And if it doesn't start, we'll get help from science. But like, we're okay. And I think that was like I just think it was a really important thing to acknowledge. And I think things like that are really important to acknowledge for all families who go through infertility, because yeah, they never imagine they're going to get to that day. And they can be quickly removed from that, like, this is what I dreamed of moment.
Yeah.
She said something like, your body is doing what you asked it to do. It needed it to do. And it's growing and carrying this baby and everything. Like, we're still very much in the normal space. Like, she would say that a lot. Like, yeah, like, I'd be freaking out because something somebody said, or my 40-week appointment. I had a midwife that was a little more traditional, and she said, oh, let's get this induction scheduled. And I was like, whoa. I got really triggered by that because I was like, I switched here because you guys said I could go to 42 weeks. And I got all upset. I decided to do a cervical sweep. It did not work. It was super painful. And I think what kind of started that conversation. Casey coached me on like, okay, this is still totally normal. You have tons of time. Every 24 hours in the last few weeks of pregnancy is like a week in itself in terms of what your body can do. So she said, okay, this is what you're going to write. You're going to contact this midwife back and say, this is what I'm comfortable doing. Because like he said, it was a scheduling logistics thing. But for me, that was something I was really sensitive about. So we came up with a plan that I felt comfortable with that satisfied that administrative thing that we needed to kind of check the box. And Casey said, we just keep doing what we're doing. So I think that type of support, the support leading up to the birth, and then also after the birth, was even more valuable to me than the support during the birth. Although Casey's counter pressure skills during labor, sure, I made it through without those. So
yeah, I'm so excited to hear the birth story.
Yeah. So 1 week later, 41 weeks and 2 days, had a checkup with a different midwife that I had not met with yet, Caitlin Stewart, and Casey knows them and said, oh, you're going to really like them. That's all she really said.
Yeah.
And she was right. Instantly made me feel better. We did a sweep. It was in the afternoon. That night I was kind of crampy throughout the day. That night it started to get pretty intense, and I had some light tinged discharge and got all excited. And Casey basically said, yeah, that's normal. Don't get excited. Talk to me tomorrow and we'll see what happens. So I stayed up way too late doing work, last minute work, ended up taking a bath at like 1:30 a.m. because it was starting to get pretty painful. Went to bed. It was about probably every hour that I felt like I was waking up and still had these intense cramps. Around 6 a.m. is when I think I kind of noticed them switching from being more consistent to having more of the wave of a start and stop. But I had really planned to just try to ignore labor as long as possible and go about my day. So woke up around 9, texted Casey and let her know what was going on. But I was looking back at our text chain last night, actually, and she's kind of said the same thing. Just we'll see type of thing. Part of me is like, oh no, this is it. This has got to be it. Like all excited, but I'm like, okay, stay calm. That's my main focus, is trying not to get excited and get that adrenaline rushing and stall things out. So
And when Lauren was texting me that, I was like, oh, okay. Like, we'll have a baby tonight or tomorrow. Like, okay. But like, doula, like, you can't. I always worked really hard to reserve any amount of your baby is almost here talk until I could see the top of their head. Like, until I could tell what color the baby's eyes were, like, I would not tell people their babies were almost here. It's so subjective. Like, you as a birth worker, you tell someone they're like, their baby's almost here. Oh, that's 24 hours to me. Like, you tell someone in labor their baby's almost here, they think like, we've got 60 seconds, right? Mm-hmm. But yeah, during those texts, I was totally downplaying it because the biggest way to quote unquote win early labor is to ignore it. And I was like, great, let's let her keep ignoring it. Like, she's doing such a great job. She was like still mentally really, really strong and like eating and drinking and moving and like doing all of the things that I was like, I'm going to keep downplaying this as long as I possibly can.
Yeah. But also, Lauren, I totally understand that feeling of being like mad at your doula for being like, it could be something, but probably not. Because I was a doula when I had my second, and I was induced with my first, but with my, I went into labor spontaneously with my second. And I remember texting my doula, and as a doula, I was like, I know that this is it. And she was like, and I remember feeling so mad. So that's like, that's a very normal thing to feel.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, all right, well, we'll see. But I just joined my work meeting at 9 a.m. I had a acupuncture appointment at, I think it was at 12:30. And that morning, Casey was like, yeah, I think you should still go. I was looking back at my text messages. I was texting her before I went, because she said, how are you feeling, or how are your contractions feeling? And I said something along the lines of like, yeah, these don't feel great. I also said, I've had to stop and kind of start to breathe through some of them. And I remember driving down 395. Every time now I go to my acupuncture office, I get excited because I feel like it's just, I have these flashbacks as I was driving there, having these contractions. And then during the appointment, laying on my back, which I'm like, I do not know how anyone labors on their back, because it was awful. Normally I fall asleep during acupuncture. I'm so relaxed. It's amazing. This was like torture. It was so painful. I was getting so nauseous. And I think I called Casey on the way home and told her, and I could talk, but I was still having to kind of breathe through them. By the time I got home, I had started shaking. So it was probably like 1:30, 2 o'clock. And I was thinking, I thought like, this is what's supposed to happen much later. Why am I already shaking? Casey had said, why don't you go home, eat something, and then go for a walk, and then you can rest. So I ate about half of a sandwich. And then I was like, I was just like so exhausted. I was like, there's no way I can go for a walk right now. I said, I've got to lay down. Continuing to try to ignore things, I looked back at my work emails and messages. I continued to send some work messages and was like, all right, I'm going to go lay down. I had not timed anything at this point because I was trying to kind of ignore it and go along throughout my day. And I was texting with both my sister-in-laws, and they were like, no, these sound real. I think you should, maybe you should start timing them. And I was like, we'll see. So a few hours I laid down and started timing them. I would fall asleep. The contraction would wake me up. I'd press start, press stop, go back to sleep. And I did that for probably about an hour. So when I woke up, I had my bloody show around 4:30. And of course, was keeping Casey updated, went downstairs and was going to try to eat something. And I got sick. I was like, all right, these things are starting to feel pretty intense. That was the first contraction I had where it wasn't just like a low down contraction. It really kind of, I felt it all over my full belly. And so I decided to get in the shower and kind of just relax in there for a little bit. And then Lindsay, my husband, I told him when I got sick and I felt that contraction change, I said, you need to text Casey and tell her that I got sick and that this is what I'm feeling. So I don't know if,
and like, yeah, as a doula, like, cool. I'll talk to people in labor all day long. When I start hearing from the partner, that is when I like it. That is when every doula across the world is like, yes, like, we are moving. You, especially like Lauren, is like, she's such a great communicator that for her not to communicate, it was like, okay, cool. Yeah. So I feel like I gave him like a task. And then I was like, we'll connect after that. And I started laying the groundwork that like, you'll do another task on your own. And then I will like slowly make my way over. And I think that's what happened.
That is all for now, but join us next time as we finish off this story with Lauren and Casey, and we'll hear how everything turned out. You can find some of the resources that we mentioned in today's episode in our show notes.
If you like what you hear, feel free to follow, like, and share this podcast with anyone you feel may benefit. We have a great community on Instagram and Facebook at Our Village Circle, and our website is www.ourvillagecircle.com. Until next time, bye-bye.
Establishing breastfeeding shouldn't be so difficult. Outdated classes, lists of rules, and complicated holds have turned an instinctual, physiological, spontaneous process into a checklist of steps that inhibit the very hormones needed to establish breastfeeding. Next, add in powerful postpartum feelings of overwhelm, pain, and exhaustion, and it's no wonder so many moms don't reach their breastfeeding goals. I am here to tell you that there is an easier way. Bring in the brand new Mindful Breastfeeding course by Tracy Donegan, the author of Mindful Breastfeeding, A Mind-Body Approach to Less Pain, Less Overwhelm, and More Milk. The Mindful Breastfeeding Program is a 4-week empowering journey, whether you're a first-time mom or experienced in breastfeeding and hoping for better luck this time around for your baby and your nipples. The Mindful Breastfeeding course is the first of its kind to help prepare you with the resources, mental flexibility, and emotional resilience to meet any challenges that you face on your breastfeeding journey with self-compassion and self-kindness. The Mindful Breastfeeding course will help you to reduce pain and stress in those important first days, increase milk production, protect and support your mental health, and reduce feelings of shame and guilt if your breastfeeding journey doesn't go as expected. If you're expecting a baby in 2023, don't wait to invest in your breastfeeding experience. You can start your journey today with a free 6-minute video by visiting www.mindfulbreastfeedingprogram.com. And if it resonates with you, we have a special offer for our Village Circle listeners. Visit www.mindfulbreastfeedingprogram.com and enter Village Circle when you check out for 20% off. There's never been a better time to invest in your breastfeeding journey. Again, visit www.mindfulbreastfeedingprogram.com and enter Village Circle when you check out for 20% off. Now, back to our episode.